You're listening to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor, powered by bbbgive.org. Here we explore the motivations that form the basis of giving and service. We inspire generosity and celebrate the transformative effects that giving and service have on the human spirit and on community. The conversations featured on the podcast also uncover giving strategies that educate and provide tools to help listeners make impactful gifts of both their time and money. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by bbbgive.org. Give.org is the nation's standards-based charity evaluator, and it's your one-stop source for information on giving and reports on the most asked-about charities. I'm Art Taylor, your host. And with me today to kick off the giving season, which starts today, Giving Tuesday, is Asha Curran, who is the CEO of Giving Tuesday. That's right. Giving Tuesday is an organization. It's more than just a movement that was created some years ago, I guess about 10 years ago now. And it swept the globe. Now, everywhere around the world, you'll hear charities campaigning about raising money on Giving Tuesday, which is the first Tuesday after Thanksgiving. Hundreds of millions of dollars are raised during this particular day, much of it online. And we're going to talk with Asha Curran, its CEO, about what to expect today, what she expects for today, and the Giving Tuesday organization and movement in general, and what it means for giving. Asha, thanks for joining me today on the Heart of Giving podcast.
Art, it's so nice to be back with you.
Asha, today is Giving Tuesday. So tell us what the American public and organizations should expect, and what we should expect around the world for that matter today.
Well, I think my greatest hope for today, Art, is that it's just going to be a tidal wave of positivity, which I think we really all need and is so incredibly rare, especially on social media channels these days. So that's what I'm happiest about. And it's actually been gearing up for weeks now. So I have no idea what the numbers will look like. This is a really volatile time in terms of donations and how nonprofits are doing, some very well, some less so. And last year was obviously such an outlier that it's really hard to predict based on that. I stay away from predictions every year anyway, but especially this year, I think there's just a lot of unknowns. But that aside, you know, nonprofits are inspired. I mean, they're the energy and creativity and especially collaboration that we've seen this year is really unprecedented.
Well, that's really great to hear because, as I mentioned, so many organizations depend on the generosity of people. And people have gone through a lot these last couple of years with the pandemic. But, you know, many charities have told me that they're holding their own despite some of these challenges. Things are not as great as they might be, but we're hopeful that this giving season will bring the type of generosity that will keep charities going. And it's so important right now because the needs are greater, too.
The needs are so great. And if you look at last year, 2020, there was some worry that giving would plummet, right? Because of the economic insecurity that you're mentioning and because of the uncertainty. But actually, the opposite happened. And giving was up. That didn't mean that across the board, nonprofits all did well. But giving was up. And I think the important thing for organizations to keep in mind is that it's not intrusive to ask people for support. It's actually a generous thing in the sense that giving is a method of coping with anxiety and uncertainty and fear. And so when this pandemic struck and with all the events of the past year, not just in the United States, but all around the world, the urge to give was almost the first thing that people reached for. And they did. They gave and they gave over and over again. And Giving Tuesday last year was up 25% over the previous Giving Tuesday. So we're really encouraging organizations not to sit back and say to themselves, well, we'll sit out on fundraising this year because there'll be too much noise, or because we're not a frontline organization, and because people are feeling so uncertain that we don't want to be rude by asking, don't retreat, right? Really lean into asking for support. But I think it's also really important for organizations to ask for support in more than one way. Not everyone can give money. Giving Tuesday is not only about money, it's about generosity in all of its forms, and it's about generosity that happens obviously completely outside of the nonprofit space. So even if it's, you know, reaching out to a neighbor, if it's, you know, cooking a meal for community, if it's, you know, distributing warm clothing or health supplies, if it's giving to a mutual aid network, you know, if it's just being kind, all of those things are manifestations of generosity. Certainly any kind of civic action or community action is also a form of generosity. So there's so many different ways to participate. And I think when people feel like they're only being asked for money, that can sometimes be a turnoff. But if there's multiple points of entry to being involved in a cause or an effort, people will be much more responsive to that.
Well, that's great to hear too. And people do give in very different ways on Giving Tuesday. Charitable organizations are one way, but as you mentioned, we can support friends and neighbors and families. We can give our stuff as much as we can, our money, to organizations. And we can sometimes just be friends, just reach out to someone and give a word of advice or a word of support. That can go a long way to elevating a person's spirit. And as you know, when we are feeling empowered, then many times we can go ahead and solve many of our own problems and produce, you know, many positive outcomes that are both enduring and meaningful. Let me ask a little bit about the origins, Asha, of Giving Tuesday. How was it formed and how did this whole thing come about?
Yeah, so it was actually created 10 years ago. I can't believe it. At the 92nd Street Y, 10 years. Isn't that crazy, Art? It's like some people think of that as a really long time and some people think of it as a really short time. And I sort of waver back and forth. It seems like forever. And it also seems like just yesterday. But so much has changed. So it's been a whirlwind of 10 years. So it was created at the 92nd Street Y in 2012. And the 92nd Street Y is a very prestigious community and cultural center, 150 years old here in New York. And it was created within that institution and incubated there for the first 6 years or so before we began the process of spinning it out, as they say. And that was a really interesting process and was generously supported by the 92nd Street Y Board of Directors, because there was really an understanding that Giving Tuesday was just so massive by that point, with just dozens and dozens of countries joining in, millions of nonprofits, and even more millions of individuals joining in. And it really needed its own organization, its own increased staffing and resource and board of directors. And so now it is an independent nonprofit that we sort of describe as the nucleus of the global movement. So we're just a small nonprofit of 25 people, and we work to support and amplify the work of the hundreds and hundreds of leaders at the country level and community level and cause level all year round. So we think of Giving Tuesday as sort of like a birthday or a wedding anniversary, that it's a big day of celebration, but of something that happens every single day of the year.
Well, yeah, that's some very impressive work you all have done. And now we have your activities taking place throughout the year. That's really important and really meaningful to organizations, because we shouldn't just depend on giving at one point in the year, but we should find ways to improve our work and collect resources throughout the year. What are some of the activities that you all are engaged in throughout the year?
So we have a lot of energy at this point toward youth engagement. We have a whole community of young people that was actually started by a child, a 12-year-old, who just approached us and said, is Giving Tuesday Kids a thing? And if not, can I start it? And from there, it's really blossomed into this global community of young people who have their own ideas about what philanthropy means and about their own place in the world. And they work together to do good in all kinds of amazing ways. And we have, at this point, we have almost 40,000 young people pledged to do.
Well, that's amazing.
Acts of goodness or acts of kindness or giving on Giving Tuesday this year, which is amazing. And then a big part of our work is around data. So the Giving Tuesday Data Commons began really just as an effort to understand what effect Giving Tuesday was having itself. So what was happening on that day? What was the social conversation around it? How much was being given? How much was being given in non-monetary forms? But what it has actually turned into is a massive collaboration with dozens and dozens of working groups and giving platforms and payment processors and academic partners, research partners, and technology partners. And we work to aggregate data and then return the findings to the entire community so that everyone can benefit. And this is a strategy that the for-profit sectors, every single possible tiny slice of the retail sector, for example, has really utilized for decades, because it's really taking that huge aggregate look at what's really happening, which is really the only way to see the whole picture, right? Rather than analyzing one specific platform or one specific nonprofit. So we are doing lots of work to understand donation patterns, for sure, at the very, very individual transactional level, not just on Giving Tuesday, but every single year, I mean, every single day of the year, going back years and years, even to before Giving Tuesday was created. So we can really see those changing and shifting patterns and behaviors, what creates donor retention, what creates donor recapture. And then we can also look at the ways that generosity manifests completely outside of monetary giving and completely outside of volunteerism. So to the very kind of person-to-person behaviors, Art, that you and I were just talking about, the very ways that people behave toward each other on a daily basis. So we hope that we'll be able to get what is really the first global, holistic landscape snapshot of generosity behaviors at this time. And that, we hope, will be integral to the next few years of recovery from what has happened to the world in this pandemic.
Could very well be. I'm part of something called the Generosity Commission, and one of the tasks I've taken on for that group is to co-chair, along with a friend of mine, John Tyler, to chair an organization that is looking into policy, and we're also trying to understand how we might inspire government action to support generosity in the United States and what policies we might establish to inspire and improve and strengthen giving. Because as we've seen, there have been a decline, at least according to data, in the number of people giving to charitable organizations. And we certainly want to reverse that trend. So we're hoping that we might better understand how people are giving. So this work you're doing is obviously going to be very important to helping us understand that. You know, we're clearly a society that is very generous. We really are. And I want to ask, have you seen any early signs or indications that can give us any insight from your work?
I think what happened in 2020 was really, really instructive. So I think there can be a tendency in the sector sometimes to look to the past rather than what's happening around us in the moment. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. In the past few years before the pandemic happened, there were some concerning downward trends in giving, right? And I think there were a lot of reasons for that. And I don't think a single one of those reasons was that people had become less generous, right? I think you can look at all kinds of things, like people are giving outside of the nonprofit space, and so their giving is not necessarily captured. I think you can point to growing income inequality, diversification of ways of manifesting generosity. Nonetheless, that was happening and being captured and causing some concern. But then 2020 happened, and we saw this outpouring of generosity that was really game-changing. And I feel that we shouldn't be looking to 2017, 2018 data and concerning ourselves with why people were giving less then, because the fact is that they're giving more now. And what is engaging people to do that? What's inspiring people to do that? What is working and what is not working? Right? Let's look at that and see this huge opportunity that we have. We have an opportunity to use this moment where people are feeling connected to one another. People are feeling like we are all in this together. We are all in the same boat and inspired to give back to their communities and aid in the healing and the hope and the tying together of our communities. And how can we best capture that moment and that feeling to do better for the sector going forward?
Asha, let me ask you how you got connected with this. Is this in your background? Well, what is your background for that matter? Because you're a terrific spokesperson for generosity in general. But how did you land this role in particular? Yeah, tell us about your life.
It's not a story that makes a whole lot of sense. I have a very nonlinear career path, and I've done everything from work in publishing to being a childbirth educator and labor support doula and parenting educator to organizing Jewish lectures at the 92nd Street Y, which was my first job there, and multiple other pit stops along the way. But when I was at the Y, I moved from working in the very local programming that the Y did and still does very well and is very famous for, to really thinking about what the word community means in the 21st century and how we can be as expansive and democratic about content distribution and distribution of ideas as possible. And so I and my colleague, Henry Timms, who I know you know, and who is now running Lincoln Center, we're really working on a whole portfolio of different projects. And Giving Tuesday was one of those projects. And the Social Good Summit was another one. We ran a women's fellowship called Women in Power, did a really interesting civic engagement project called the Ben Franklin Circles. And each one of these projects was really an exercise in distributed agency. How can you create an idea and then invite as many people as possible, not just to participate in your idea, but actually to own their own bits of it, right? To really take it and even to change it and to adapt it. And with Giving Tuesday, that is the key to Giving Tuesday's scale. That everyone, every organization, every country was invited to take it and make it their own. So it's not a franchise. It's not an American export. It's really something that, you know, looks like Giving Tuesday Russia looks like Giving Tuesday Russia and only Russia, right? And Giving Tuesday Tanzania looks like Giving Tuesday Tanzania. And Giving Tuesday Brazil looks like Giving Tuesday Brazil and is totally and completely authentic to those places and is led by people who are in those places. And that's true at like the micro level in a tiny town. It's true at an organizational level. It's true at a country level. And that has really enabled the kind of spread that we see with Giving Tuesdays, that people don't feel that they're just borrowing it. They really feel that they have not only co-created it, but that they really own their small piece of it. So once we began to do that work and it began to scale, obviously, it just needed full-time attention and really just captured my imagination completely. I'm sure that I'll do something else at some point. It's a project that is endlessly changing and surprising me. And we are so open to the organic innovations that arise from within the community that, you know, no 2 weeks, let alone no 2 years, are ever the same.
One of my good friends is a futurist by the name of Bob Johansson. And Bob's number one forecast for the future is that everything that can be distributed will be distributed. And now we see even this idea of giving money away to charity or giving of ourselves is done in a more distributed fashion. Charity to charity on Tuesday, on Giving Tuesday, or right after Thanksgiving is now a distributed idea. It's something that everyone can take a piece of in its own way, which is, I think, remarkable.
I like your friend's saying, everything that can be distributed will be, and obviously not everything can be, right? Institutions aren't going anywhere, but it's true. You know, people expect to have a voice. People have agency now in a way that when everything was very centralized, that wasn't necessarily the case. So this is a really interesting model, not even outside of the value of generosity entirely. It's a really interesting model to think about the hybrid of institutions and movements and how we can draw the best from each one.
Yeah, you've actually added a little bit of an institution to it, which is, you know, really fun too, to see how the interplay between this free-flowing and distributed concept on Giving Tuesday after Thanksgiving now has a little bit of an institutional frame that actually can also grab what's happening and help people understand what's going on.
Yep.
And I just think that's really important because all institutions need to understand this this disintermediation that we're feeling right now. This is going on and we really need to assess our value. A world in which things are going to be distributed, and what is our value? Charities, to a large extent, are institutions and intermediaries.
Yes.
And we need to stand between a cause and a person who wants to participate in that cause.
Yes, exactly.
So somehow we've got to demonstrate what our value truly is. And it seems that that's what you're doing now with this institution, Giving Tuesday.
Yeah. That, and you know, it's so interesting because in the very beginning, right, there was this comparison with Black Friday and Cyber Monday, which many people still make, but you'll notice that it never comes from us. We never use that phrasing anymore because it's a global movement, right? We're in 80 countries at this point, and Black Friday and Cyber Monday are just not a thing in many of those countries. I would even say most of those countries. So it's global, not American. And so we don't use that wording anymore. But in the beginning, we actually predicted that Giving Tuesday would end up kind of like Cyber Monday, right? That it would be just this sort of free-floating idea, hashtag out there in the world, and that we, as like the movers of it, would dissolve, and then it would just live and people would use it every year, right? Probably to great effect, just like Cyber Monday is used every year and not owned by anybody. And I think that would have been fine. It really would have been fine, and it would have continued, and nonprofit organizations would have continued to use it. But at some point along the way, we realized that a structure was forming itself. So the distributed leadership network is not just 500 people scattered to the winds all over the world doing their Giving Tuesday work. They actually form this incredible, highly interconnected and interdependent peer learning network. So that in itself is a structure, and it's a structure that sort of just got built. And then we added the strategy afterwards, sort of, you know, and saying, like, this is really an amazing thing. Like, these levels upon levels of communities, young people, organizational leaders, country leaders, community leaders, cause coalitions, all of these different networks of networks were forming. And we, as the sort of facilitators, conveners, connectors, felt like we had an increasingly important place within that structure. And that didn't take away from the sense of co-ownership or the freedom of all of those actors to take and do with the movement whatever they felt was right, as long as it's for good, right? But it did mean that there was some strategy, some vision, some values, culture, norms that we were able to sort of infuse into those networks that has kept everything really very, very cohesive. And then the data piece is obviously by necessity more structured as well. So you're right. It has, I think, become a sort of hybrid between an institution and a movement, right? It's certainly not something like Occupy, which was by design without leadership, right? It was completely decentralized. We are not decentralized, and we never use that word. We use the word that your friend uses, which is distributed. So we do have, there is a center, you know, there is an organization, and the organization, you know, exists to amplify and support. But I think it's a really interesting model.
Yeah, we've developed something that I want to talk a little bit about, but I also just want to mention how great it has been over the years to have our organization, the Wise Giving Alliance, partner with you all to make sure that giving on Giving Tuesday is actually great giving, and that people giving the things that they have and that they really want go to where they intend that giving to go. This is a relationship that we've really enjoyed.
Thank you. With you too.
Well, we've created something that we call the first ever donation portal based on blockchain technology.
Wow.
So imagine making a donation to your favorite charity, and that charity then gets to get your information if you want them to have it. So now you've gotten data and you've gotten a donation. And in exchange for that donation, the donor actually receives Wise Giving points. And those points can be redeemed for different kinds of experiences with a charity to actually bring a person or a donor closer to that charity.
Mm-hmm.
So we set up the platform, but there's no connection between the Wise Giving Alliance, the creator of the platform, and the donor or the charity. The transaction doesn't come to us. It goes directly to the donors. And the relationship is between the charity and the donor. So it's also very distributed. And because of this blockchain, of course, it's also highly secure. And given the popularity now of cryptocurrency and people willing to do many things with these alternative currencies, these virtual currencies, you know, we can now make a donation using different currencies as well on this platform. So it's really exciting. It's a great development. And again, playing off this notion that you should really try to understand how to create these close relationships with your donors between people and institutions that they want to support or the causes that really matter to them. And so this is, I think, also in line with what you all have been able to do with this concept, this movement, and now this institution, Giving Tuesday.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating, Art. And I would love to put you in touch with our data lead to talk about that a little bit more. I am one of those people who can only pretend to really understand blockchain. And I've stopped pretending for the most part because it's never very convincing. But I think he actually does understand it. And I know that so there's an effort called Crypto Giving Tuesday. And they have 10 times more organizations participating this year than last year. So I think you're right. And this is going to be a big, big thing. And I think I'm going to venture to say that many nonprofit leaders are as confused about it as I am. And so we need all the tools that we can to really help immerse ourselves in that world and to maximize its potential.
Yeah, it's really not as straightforward as it seems. But then I do think about, we don't know how many of the platforms work. I mean, I certainly don't understand what's behind, for instance, Facebook or Twitter for that matter, or even LinkedIn. But we use these social media platforms and we get value from them. And these are more centralized and controlled platforms. And in the case of blockchain, it's not centralized, although the situation can be if you want it to. In the case of many of these platforms, they're more of a hybrid where you can pick and choose how much centralization you want. So what we need to do with blockchain, I think, in general, is have people appreciate what you can do with it rather than how it's done. And I think if we can get people there, we will be at a good place with it.
So smart. I think you're absolutely right. And one of my first, when I began to work on Giving Tuesday, I didn't know anything about the sector. I'm not like a sector lifer or anything like that. And one of my first big lessons was this world of platforms that sort of sit between the giver and the receiver, right? And I just, there, it's almost like a shadow world to most of people who aren't in the know. And it was like, it was a major education for me to understand. So I think you're absolutely right.
Well, as we roll toward the end of the interview, I want to say thank you for your continuing efforts to channel our generosity and to help now help us even understand it and focus on it in ways that can make it really effective and grow. And we certainly need, as you said at the beginning of the interview, we need this moment of good news. We need to open our hearts and our wallets and allow ourselves to feel the power of giving and supporting things that matter to us. And I believe that this is going to be one of those very special giving years. I think that we've all seen such a difficult stretch that now we believe that we have the power to change that. Whether we are able to move around in the same way that we could without masks, whether everyone's vaccinated or not, we still have the power in our hands to change the world in some small or gigantic way, depending on how things go. And it's up to us. But what you've done, again, has helped us channel that and helped us focus it and helped us bring it to everyone's attention, to bring our attention in a way that I think will drive us to really participate and more of us I believe, will participate. So I'm really thankful for that.
Art, I just couldn't say anything more eloquent than you just summed it up. And I appreciate everything you just said. I appreciate you having me and for being such a good partner all these years.
Well, great. You've been listening to Asha Curran, who is the CEO of Giving Tuesday. Giving Tuesday, the organization, and she was also around for the founding of the movement and has been a part of it since the beginning. Asha, it's been great to have you on the Heart of Giving podcast, and I wish you continued success in everything you're doing on our behalf.
Thank you, Art. Happy Giving Tuesday.
This is the Heart of Giving podcast. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll listen to other episodes by just going to any of the major podcast platforms. You can also follow us and subscribe on Patreon if you want to make a donation, patreon.com. And also make a comment on, especially on Apple Podcasts. We would love to get a favorable review on Apple Podcasts because that helps us to build audience. Thank you very much.
You've just listened to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To listen to our other interviews, visit heartgiving.podbean.com. That's heartgiving.podbean.com. Subscribe to our show on major podcast platforms. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Podbean's Terms of Service.